Feynman or something, but do you think I could kiss you until it's time? I'll be more careful with your face and your clothes, I promise. Careful? That's not very tempting. Sorry, it's my best offer currently. She sighed with mock reluctance. I guess I haven't really got anything else to do. He took her face in his hands, placing his fingertips delicately again to avoid her injuries, and when his lips touched hers this time, they were so soft there was barely any weight to them at all. She still felt the buzz, the electricity under her skin, but there was an odd kind of comfort to the very gentleness of it. It was like before, like back in the kitchen at the ranch, only a little more cautious. Still, she remembered the morning vividly, and that shifted things. She considered changing the tempo, twisting into his lap and wrapping her legs around him, but she hesitated. It felt so nice, just as it was. Her fingers found their way to his curls, as was rapidly becoming her habit. He kissed her neck, lightly tasting the places where her pulse beat beneath her skin. He whispered into her good ear.
One thing concerns me.
Just one thing? She breathed.
Well, aside from the obvious.
His mouth returned to hers, still careful, but this time more exploratory. It had been a decade, nearly, since anyone had kissed her, but it felt longer. No one had ever kissed her like this, with time slowing down and her brain stopping and all the electricity.
Do you want to know what it is?
He asked a few minutes later.
The thing that concerns me.
Oh, right, sure.
Well, he said, pausing to kiss her eyelids. I know exactly how I feel about you.
Her lips again, her throat.
But I'm not entirely sure how you feel about me.
It's not obvious. He leaned away from her, still holding her face, and stared at her, curious.
We seem to share a level of attraction.
I'll say.
But is there anything more for you?
She stared, not sure what he was looking for. He sighed.
You see, Alex, I'm in love with you.
He searched her face, analyzing her reaction, then frowned and let his hands drop to her shoulders.
And I can tell that you're not buying that, but there it is. Despite what my recent behavior may have implied, sex is not my end goal here. And I guess I'd like to know what your goals are.
My goals? She looked at him incredulously. Are you serious?
He nodded gravely.
Her voice sounded sharper than she'd meant it to when she answered. I have only one goal, and that's to keep both you and me alive. Maybe if I can do that long enough, we'll actually have a reasonable expectation of life beyond the next 24 to 48 hours. Should we ever be in that happy position, I can think about having other goals. Goals imply a future.
His frown spread from his mouth to his eyes, his brows pushed down and together.
Are things really that bad?
Yes, she exploded, her hands clenching into fists. She took a deep breath. I thought that was obvious, too.
The sun was setting. They should have been on the move 5 minutes ago. She jumped down from the Humvee and whistled for the dogs. Einstein bounded past her eagerly, ready to be back on the road. She went to pick up Lola, but Daniel was there first. Alex stretched and tried to focus. She felt decently rested and would probably be fine driving all night. That was all that mattered. Just making it through the night without garnering any more attention than she had to. Sending Kevin's email, and then getting her little traveling circus into a less flamboyant vehicle. That was the limit of her ambition. They drove in silence for a while. It got dark while they were still on back roads. When they eased onto I-49, Alex relaxed a little. There hadn't been very many cars, and everything they had seen was old and fit the countryside. For now, she was fairly certain that no one knew exactly where they were. She knew she should be concentrating, but the dark road with the steady flow of anonymous traffic was monotonous, and she couldn't help wondering what Daniel was thinking. It wasn't like him to be so quiet. She thought about turning on the radio, but that felt sort of cowardly. She probably owed him an apology.
I'm sorry if I was rough back there, she said, the words sounding very loud after the long lull. I'm not good at this people stuff. There's really no excuse for me. I'm a full-grown adult. I should be able to hold a normal conversation.
Sorry. His sigh didn't sound exasperated. It was more like relief.
No, I'm the one who's sorry. I shouldn't have pushed. My lack of focus landed us in this position. I will get it together.
She shook her head. You can't think of it that way. You're not responsible for this. Look, someone has decided to kill you. It happened to Kevin 6 months ago, and it happened to me a few years before that. You'll make mistakes because it's impossible to know what is or isn't a mistake until it's made. But mistakes don't mean you're guilty for what is happening. Never forget that there was a real human being who decided to put his agenda ahead of your existence. He thought about that for a minute.
I know what you're saying. I believe it, but I need to listen to you more closely. Act like you. Keep my mind on what matters. It doesn't help us to have me mooning around like a teenager, worrying about whether or not you like me.
Honestly, Daniel,
No. He interrupted immediately. I did not mean to hijack this conversation with that comment.
I just want to explain. If you're a teenager, I'm a toddler. I'm emotionally backward, defective, even. I don't know how to do any of this, and while survival is obviously the priority, I'm also using it to deflect questions I should be able to answer. I mean, love? I don't even know what that is, or if it's real. Sorry, it's just foreign to me. I evaluate things based on needs and wants. I can't deal with anything fluffier. Daniel laughed his funny laugh, and all the tension bled right out of her. She laughed with him, and then sighed. Everything felt less awful when she could laugh along with Daniel. He released one final chuckle, then said lightly,
"So, tell me what you need."
She thought it through. "I need you to be alive, and I would like to be alive too. That's my baseline. If I get more than that, I would prefer to have you close by. After that, anything else is just frosting."
Call me an optimist, but I think we may just be dealing with nothing more than some semantic issues here.
You could be right. If we get a few more weeks together, maybe we'll figure out how to speak the same language. He took her hand.
I've always been a quick study with linguistics.
Chapter 22.
Alex chose the gas station outside Baton Rouge based on the age of the cashier. He was 80 if he was a day, and she had high hopes that his vision and hearing were past their prime. Once she ascertained that he was paying her absolutely no attention at all, despite the fact that her thick makeup was far from convincing, she did some thorough shopping. More water, lots of nuts and jerky, any kind of non-perishable protein she could find. She grabbed some cans of V8, though she wasn't a fan, as the convenience store didn't have a fresh produce section. She acknowledged to herself that she would have to go to an actual grocery store at some point, but she hoped they could wait it out a bit longer. Every day her bruises faded a little more. There was no drama at the 24-hour internet coffee place either. It was near the university, so it had no shortage of late-night seat fillers. She kept her hood up and her face down, sat in a secluded corner, and asked for a plain black coffee without looking at the barista who came for her order. She wished she had time to do this from somewhere not on the trail to their destination, but the first priority had to be exchanging the Batmobile. It was currently her biggest disadvantage. She created a brand new email account registered to a name that was no more than a random combination of letters and numbers. Then she tried to channel Kevin.
"You should have left it alone, Devers. You shouldn't have involved a civilian. I'm not here to do your dirty work, but I took care of the little interrogator for you. Texas was a nice way to say you're welcome. Enough is enough."
Not a specific threat, but plenty implied. She hesitated for a second with her finger over the mouse, the little arrow touching the send button. Was she giving them anything they didn't have? They would know by now that Daniel wasn't among the dead back at the ranch. She couldn't try to fool Devers on that point. Was there some way she wasn't seeing for this to come back at them? Could this make things worse? She hit the button. Things couldn't get that much worse anyway. As soon as it was sent, she was on her feet. The Humvee was parked in the alley around the back behind a couple of dumpsters. She walked quickly with her head down, hood up, and a syringe in hand. The side street was mostly empty, just one small knot of people huddled close together in the darkness of a recessed emergency door. She studied the trio for a second before she climbed into the dark vehicle. Einstein touched his nose to her shoulder. Daniel took her hand. "Do you know where the night vision goggles are?" she murmured. He dropped her hand.
"Is something wrong?"
he whispered back. He turned to rummage between the seats. "Nothing new," she promised. "Maybe something helpful." He handed her the goggles. She switched them on and took a better look at the little conference. It was just breaking up. This wasn't a particularly rough area of town, and all three participants were expensively dressed, though their clothes were casual. A dark-haired man was holding hands with a blonde girl who had so many showy labels on the different pieces of clothing she wore that she looked like a NASCAR driver sponsored by mid-level luxury brands. These two were walking off now, their path angling away from the Humvee. The blonde bobbled and swayed a little as she walked. The man with her was stuffing something into the pocket of his hoodie. The third person stayed in the dark doorframe, leaning against it casually, like he was expecting more guests soon. His clothing was what she would describe as upmarket frat boy. She thought about what she'd just been feeling inside the cafe before she pushed send, that things couldn't get much worse. She supposed there were ways this spontaneous idea of hers could go south, but she couldn't think of any that she wouldn't be able to handle quietly. And it would be a big help if the frat boy was what she thought he was. She pulled the goggles off. "Where's the cash?" she whispered. 30 seconds later, syringe in one hand and roll of 50s in the other, she slid quietly from the Humvee and walked toward the man, who was still relaxed against the wall, like there was no place he'd rather be. She couldn't see very clearly without the goggles, but she thought she caught his minimal reaction when he realized she was approaching him. His body stiffened just slightly, but he didn't move. "Hello," she said, when she was close enough that she could speak quietly and still be sure he could hear.
"Evening,"
he responded in a lazy southern drawl. "I was wondering if you could help me. I'm looking for a specific product." Her inflection went up on the end, like it was a question. She didn't know how to buy drugs off the street. She'd never had to do it before. This was the first time the supplies she'd been able to amass during her time in Chicago had run dry. Joey G never minded paying in product. She expected that the frat boy would accuse her of being a cop, like dealers always did on TV. But he just nodded.
"I might be able to help. What are you looking for?"
It was unlikely he was a cop, unless the sale she'd just watched had been faked to draw a real customer in. If he tried to arrest her, she'd knock him out and escape. A manhunt in Baton Rouge would hardly be her biggest problem, and she knew he couldn't see her face well. He hadn't reacted to the damage. "Opioids, opium or heroin or morphine." There was a pause as he peered into the darkness under her hood. She didn't think he was successful in seeing much.
"Well, that's an exotic list. Opium? Huh. I have no idea where you could get that around here."
"Heroin will do just as well. I'd prefer the powdered form if possible. I don't suppose it's likely you'd have anything uncut." It was all but impossible that he would have pure heroin. Whatever he had would have been modified 2 or 3 times before it reached his hands, not that he would tell her the truth. Purification was a bit of a pain, but she'd make the time. He laughed once, and she guessed her shopping style was probably not the norm.
"I've got some upscale stuff. It's not cheap, though."
"You get what you pay for," Alex said. "I'm not looking for a deal."
$200 a gram. Pure white powder."
"Sure it is," she thought to herself. But corrupted heroin was better than no heroin. 3 grams, please." He paused. Though it was too dark to really read his expression, she could tell what he wanted from the way he cocked his head to the side. She pulled the cash from her pocket and counted out 12 bills. She wondered for a second if he would try to steal the rest from her, but he seemed to be a businessman. He'd want an apparently affluent customer like her to become a regular client. He took the money she offered, looked it over quickly, then stowed it in the back pocket of his cargo shorts. She tensed when he crouched down, but he was just pulling a backpack out from behind a pile of garbage bags dumped against the wall. He didn't have to search for what he wanted. He was standing again a second later, holding out three small plastic bags. In the dark, she couldn't be positive about the color, but it looked close to white. She held out her hand, and he laid the bags on her palm. "Thank you," she said.
"My pleasure, ma'am."
He did a funny little nod, almost a bow. Alex hurried back to the Humvee, glad that it was hard to make out from this angle. The dealer would see a large, dark-colored vehicle, and not much more than that. Einstein whined quietly as she climbed into the passenger seat.
"Let's go," she said.
Daniel started the engine. "Turn left down that side street so that guy won't get a good look at the Humvee."
"What just happened?"
Daniel whispered as he followed her instructions. Even in a whisper, the tension was easy to hear. No wonder the dog was anxious. "Just picking up some ingredients I needed."
"Ingredients?"
"I was out of opioids." As they moved out onto a wider road, Alex could feel his tension easing, probably due to her nonchalance.
"Was that a drug deal then?"
"Yes. Remember what I said about bathtub chemistry? Getting my raw materials is a little more complicated than it used to be. I didn't want to pass up the opportunity." It was quiet for a moment. "I hope that was the right move," she muttered.
"You think he'll tell someone about us?"
She blinked for a second. "What? Oh, no, I'm not worried about the dealer. I was just thinking about sending that email."
"The email was Kevin's call," Daniel responded.
She nodded. "And he has a better batting average than I do."
"No, I just meant that if it goes south, it was his call."
She laughed once. It was a heavy sound.
"You don't like it?"
"I don't know. I want to finish this, but I'm tired, Daniel. I also want to run away and hide."
"That doesn't sound so bad,"
he agreed.
Oh, if I was invited."
She glanced at him, surprised. "Of course."
"Good."
There it was again, that automatic, "of course." That crazy assumption that he would be present for whatever future she was allowed. She didn't know if it was the wearing strain or something more, but an annoying feeling of presentiment haunted her for the rest of the night. Maybe it was just the jitters from finally getting her hands on some coffee for the first time in 2 days. She was almost shocked when, 7 hours later, and with the sun already well above the horizon, they reached the secluded cabin without incident. Daniel had taken them down only 2 wrong turns. Impressive, considering he hadn't been to the cabin since he was 10 years old. And all the roads they'd traveled after sunrise were empty. That meant no one could report seeing an armored vehicle in the vicinity. She parked the Humvee behind the detached garage for the present. Daniel kicked a few rocks around the base of the stairs until he found the plastic one. He removed the concealed key and then walked up the porch steps with Einstein at his heels. Alex stood in front of the log cabin. It was a red cedar A-frame, charming, despite some evidence that it had been built in the 70s, so tired she couldn't move those last few steps. Though the night had been blessedly uneventful, it had still been a long time on the road. She'd traded seats with Daniel outside Baton Rouge, and then been too wired by the sense of apprehension that had troubled her since sending the email to relinquish control again. Daniel had napped off and on, and he seemed almost chipper now. He passed her to go retrieve Lola from the back of the Humvee.
"You look like you might need to be carried too,"
he commented as he passed her again, this time with the dog. He set Lola beside the door, and then came back for Alex.
"Give me a second," she mumbled, brain sleeping.
"Just a few more steps," he encouraged.
He put an arm around her waist and pulled her gently forward. Once she started moving, it was easier. Inertia got her up the stairs and through the front door. She only partially took in a high wall of triangular windows looking out over a swampy forest, aged but comfortable-looking couches, an old-fashioned wood-burning stove, and a short open stairway, as he steered her past it all and down a compact hallway.
"The master is over here, I think. Kev and I always got the loft. I'll unload and get the dog settled, then I'll crash too."
She nodded as he showed her into a dim room with a large iron bedstead. That was all she noticed before her head hit the pillow.
"Poor darling,"
she heard Daniel chuckle as she sank into the dark. She came back to consciousness slowly, drifting up through layers of dreamy non-reality. She was comfortable and calm. Nothing had startled her awake. And even before she was fully lucid, she was aware of Daniel's body warm beside her. A low, close thrumming caught her attention, but before the sound could frighten her, she felt the breeze of the oscillating fan move gently down the length of her body. She opened her eyes. It was still dim, but the light was a different color than it had been when she'd collapsed. It leaked in around the lined floral that covered the big window on the opposite wall. Early evening, not as hot as before. She must have been sweating earlier, but it was dried now, a film that felt stiff against the skin of her face. The room was made of long red logs just like the outside. More light came from behind her. She rolled over and saw the skylight above the open vanity. Her backpack, her gas mask, and the first aid kit were by the sink. Daniel might not be a natural fugitive, but he was more thoughtful than anyone else she'd ever known. She tiptoed out to the hall and did some quick surveillance. The rest of the cabin was small, just a kitchen with an attached nook for a dining room, the living room with all the windows, the open loft above it, and a small second bedroom with a hall bath. She used that bath to take a quick, much-needed shower. There were shampoo and conditioner in the little blue shower tub combo, but no soap, so she used the shampoo as body wash. She was glad the soap was missing, just like she was glad the refrigerator was empty and that there was a fine layer of dust on all the counters. No one had been in these rooms for a while. After she quickly applied new bandages to her face and examined her hands, which looked much better than she'd thought they would, she peeked through the long windows beside the front door to check on the dogs. They were snoozing contentedly on the porch. She was getting used to the comfort of having an early alarm system. She was a little hungry, but felt too lazy to do anything about it right away. She remembered how it felt yesterday to wake up alone, and she didn't want Daniel to experience the same panic. She wasn't really sleepy anymore, but she was tired, and the bed still looked pretty good. It was probably avoidance. As long as she kept her eyes closed and her head on the pillow, she didn't have to start planning what needed to happen next. She returned to her earlier position, curled up against Daniel's chest, and let herself relax. There wasn't anything that she had to do immediately. 20 minutes of unthinking rest wasn't so much to ask, or even an hour. She'd gotten them here alive. She'd earned it. Unfortunately, not thinking was easier said than done. She found herself dwelling on the promise she'd made to Daniel that she wouldn't leave him behind. On the one hand, she knew she would never be satisfied with any long-distance arrangement for his safety. Even if she could stockpile a year's worth of food, even if she could be positive that the owners wouldn't come back, even if she could arm this place to vaporize any intruder, and even if she could lock Daniel inside like a prisoner so he couldn't wander off and find trouble, she would not be satisfied. Because what if? The hunters had found him before, and she'd left a trail, albeit a faint one, to this place. She could take him north to her rental, but the department had contacted her while she was living there. She didn't think they knew her address, but what if? As long as Daniel stayed near her, she could do what was necessary to protect him, things he wouldn't think of himself. She could see the traps he wouldn't see. On the other hand, was that just her own wants talking? She wanted to be with Daniel. Was her mind coming up with proofs for that necessity? Was her logic flawed, twisting to accommodate her personal wishes? How could she be sure? When she'd told him before that it wasn't a good idea to have her liability close beside her while she went on the attack, she knew that was sound logic. Of course, if they got to him while she was far away, that distance wouldn't remove the hold they'd have on her. She sighed. How could she see clearly? Her emotions had tangled this whole situation into a knot of Gordian complexity. Still unconscious, Daniel shifted to wrap his arm around her. She knew what he would say about her dilemma, and she also knew that his perspective would not help her to see more clearly. He sighed, starting to stir. His fingers traced down the length of her spine, then slowly back up. They played with the wet fringes of hair on the back of her neck. He stretched with a groan, and then his hands were back in her hair.
"You've been up," he murmured.
His eyes opened slowly, blinking as they worked to focus. In the dusky room, they were dark gray.
"It didn't stick," she answered.
He laughed as his eyes slid shut again. He tucked her more tightly into his chest.
"Good. What time is it?"
"Around 4, I think."
"Anything to worry about?"
"No, not for right now, at least."
"That's nice."
"Yeah, it really is."
"This is nice,"
he said. His hand traced back up her spine again, then trailed over her right shoulder, traced slightly across her collarbone, and finally curved around the good side of her face. He tilted it up until their noses touched.
"Yes, this too,"
Alex agreed.
"More than nice,"
he murmured, and she would have agreed, but he was kissing her. His hand on her face was soft, his lips soft, but the arm around her waist strained her tight against his chest. She wrapped her arms around his neck and held herself closer still. It wasn't like the car, where the pulse of the hunt had been loud in both their ears, when they were still shocked and panicking. There was no horror, just the rhythm of her heart and his, speeding without fear. She supposed it was inevitable, the way they'd been carrying on, that given a quiet place far away, for the moment, from any danger, with just the two of them together and no interruptions, there would be nothing to keep them apart any longer. The strange thing, then, was how it didn't feel at all inevitable. Somehow, it was the biggest surprise of her life. It was all a jumble of opposites tumbling together in a way that left her helpless to analyze any of them. Comfortable, familiar, but also electric and new. Gentle at the same time it was extreme, both soothing and overwhelming. It was like every nerve ending in her body was lit up with dozens of conflicting stimuli simultaneously. All she was really sure of was the Danielness of him, that core of something pure, something better than anything she'd known before. He belonged to a more excellent world than the one where she resided, and while they were part of each other, she felt like she was allowed to be there with him. She knew her past experience with relationships was quite limited by most people's standards, so she didn't have much to compare this to. She'd always thought of sex as a single event that had a defined end, an effort at physical gratification that sometimes satisfied and sometimes did not. This experience didn't fit into the same category on any level. It was less an event and more an ongoing exploration of each other, a satisfaction of curiosity, a fascination over each little detail discovered. It wasn't about gratification, but there was no need that wasn't met, whether it was physical or something less definable. She searched for the right word as they lay kissing quietly, patiently now, with the light turning red around the edges of the curtain. She wasn't sure what to label this emotion that filled her so entirely that she thought it might stretch her skin. It was a little like that bubbly feeling that had left her smiling at the thought of him, but multiplied by thousands, millions, and then fired in a crucible until every impurity, every lesser sensation was burned out, leaving only this behind. She didn't have a name for it. The closest she could think of was joy.
"I love you," he whispered against her lips. "I love you."
Maybe that was the word. She just never thought its definition could be so huge.
"Daniel," she murmured. "You don't have to say anything back. I just needed to say that out loud. I might have exploded had I tried to keep it in. I will probably have to say it again soon. You are forewarned."
He laughed. She smiled. "I never want to go back to having nothing to lose. I'm glad I have you as my liability. I'm grateful. I'd have you as anything." She laid her head against his chest and listened to his breath moving in and out. For so long now, breathing had been her priority. If she could have spoken to the woman she was even just a month ago, she knew that woman would have been terrified of expanding that priority to include another set of lungs. That woman would have run away from needing anything more than her own life. But what she would have missed. Alex couldn't even remember what she'd been holding on to back then. This was the kind of life worth fighting to keep.
I think I was probably 12, maybe 13, when I sort of gave up on living an extraordinary life.
He mused thoughtfully, running his fingers in aimless patterns through her hair.
That's probably about the age that everyone starts to grow up and leave fantasy behind. You realize you're never going to discover that you're actually an alien, adopted by those prosaic human parents with amazing superpowers that will save the world.
He chuckled.
I mean, you know that much earlier, but you can't quite let go. Not for years. And then the world beats you down a little, and some of the color goes out of life, and you settle for reality. I think I did a decent job of it. I found plenty of happiness in the drab, everyday world, but I want you to know, this time with you has been extraordinary. There has been terror, yes, but along with it, there's been a kind of joy I didn't know existed. And it's because you are extraordinary. I'm so glad you found me. My life was destined to change drastically, it seems, in one way or another. I'm just so grateful that it got to be with you.
Her throat was tight, and she marveled as she blinked furiously to keep the moisture in her eyes from pooling. She'd cried in grief, in pain, in loneliness, and even in fear. But this was the first time in her life she'd had tears of joy in her eyes. It seemed a strange response, something she'd never truly taken at face value when she'd read about it. This was the first time she'd understood that joy could be even more severe than pain. She would happily have never left the bed, but eventually they had to eat. Daniel didn't complain, but she could tell he would be pleased when he had access to real food again. It was strange, as they sat at the little table in the alcove eating jerky peanuts and chocolate chip cookies, laughing and scratching the dog's ears. Of course they'd caved quickly and brought Einstein and Lola inside. If you were going to break and enter, you might as well do it in style. To think that they didn't have to get back into the Batmobile and drive tensely through the night again. They had a dozen empty hours ahead of them, open to fill in any way they wanted. She had a fairly good idea of what they would probably choose to do. But the point was, the freedom. It felt too good to be true. So, naturally, Kevin had to call.
"Hey, Danny, you guys good?" she heard him say. His voice was, as always, penetrating. "I'm excellent," Daniel said. Alex shook her head at him, no need to elaborate.
Great. You got to the McKinleys, I presume."
"Yeah, the place hasn't changed."
"Good. That means it still belongs to them. Did you get enough rest?"
Yes. Thanks for inquiring."
Alex sighed, knowing Kevin would never ask just to be polite. Too good to be true, indeed. She held out her hand at the same time that she heard Kevin say,
"Let me talk to Oleander."
Daniel looked confused, clearly not following, but he handed her the phone.
"Let me guess," Alex said. "You need us to join you as soon as possible."
"Yes."
The corners of Daniel's lips turned down.
"What did Devers do?"
Alex asked.
"Nothing. And I don't like it. Because of course he's doing something, but he's being more cautious now. He's not letting me see anything because he guesses that I'm watching. He must be making calls from other people's offices so I can't hear. What did the email say?"
She recited it to him word perfect. She'd known he would want the details, so she'd memorized it.
"Not bad, Ollie. Not bad. Maybe a little smart for me, but that's okay."
"So what are you thinking?"
"I want to strike within the week, which means you need to get here and get set to move at the same time."
She sighed heavily.
"Agreed."
"Is the Suburban still there?"
I haven't checked yet."
"Why not?" he demanded.
"I slept in."
"You need to toughen up, sweetheart. The beauty sleep can wait for a few weeks."
"I'd like to be in top form for this."
"Yeah, yeah. When can you move?"
"Where are we going exactly?"
"I've got a place for us to crash. Do you have something to write with?"
He gave her an address. It was in a part of D.C. she wasn't familiar with. She thought the area he was sending them to was in a rather posh part of town, but that didn't fit with her idea of a bolt hole. She must be picturing the wrong neighborhood. She'd been out of the city for a while.
Okay, let me get our stuff together. We'll leave as soon as we can, if we have another car option available.
You'll need to stop outside Atlanta sometime after 9 a.m. I found a place for Lola.
What did you tell them? About the bullet hole in her leg, I mean.
You were in a carjacking. Both you and the dog were injured. You're heading to Atlanta to stay with your mother for a while, but she's allergic. You're very traumatized, and they shouldn't ask about it. Your name is Andy Wells, and they know you'll pay cash. I'm your concerned brother in this scenario, by the way.
Nice.
Of course. Now go check the garage and call me back.
We'll go, sir, she said sarcastically. He hung up on her.
Are we really going to steal the McKinley's car? Daniel asked.
If we're lucky, yes.
He sighed.
Look, we'll leave the Humvee in the garage. It's got to be worth 4 or 5 Suburbans at least. If we aren't able to bring their car back, they won't take a loss, right?
I suppose.
Kevin won't like his favorite plaything being offered as collateral.
That part's just the gravy.
The house key fit the garage door. Daniel promised that inside and just to the right of the door, next to the light switch, there would be a little hook with 2 sets of car keys hanging from it. He flipped the switch. Alex gasped. I've died and gone to heaven.
Huh. They got a new car,
Daniel said, less excited.
I guess the old Suburban must have finally quit.
Alex moved around the vehicle, stroking its side with her fingertips. Look at this, Daniel. Have you ever seen anything more beautiful?
Yes. It's just a silver SUV, Alex. It looks exactly like every third car on the road.
I know. Isn't that fantastic? And look at this. She towed him around the car and pointed to a little chrome plaque by the taillight. He stared at her, totally confused.
It's a hybrid? So...
It's a hybrid! She half sang, throwing her arms around him. This is like Christmas!
I had no idea you were so green.
Psh! You know how many times we're going to have to stop for gas in this thing? 2! Maybe 3 times! Max! All the way to D.C. And look! Just look at those gorgeous plates! She pointed with both hands, part of her noting that she must look like a game show hostess.
Yes, they're Virginia plates. The McKinleys live in Alexandria most of the year, Alex. That's not a huge surprise.
This car is going to be invisible in D.C. It's like a stealth bomber. If anyone manages to follow the trail we left in the Texan Batmobile, they'll hit a dead end now. This is a beautiful thing, Daniel. And I don't think you're fully appreciating what amazing luck this is.
I don't like stealing from friends, he grumbled.
The McKinleys are nice people?
Very nice. They were lovely to my family.
So they probably wouldn't want you to die, right?
He gave her a dark look.
No, probably not.
I'm sure if they knew the whole story, they would want you to borrow this car.
Borrow implies we're bringing it back.
Which of course we will, unless we're dead. Do you think anything but death could keep Kevin from retrieving his favorite ride?
Daniel was abruptly much more serious. He folded his arms across his chest and turned to face the car rather than her.
Don't joke about that.
Alex was a little confused by his mood shift. I'm not actually joking, she clarified. I was trying to make you feel better about taking the car. We'll bring it back if we can, I promise.
Just don't talk about dying. Not like that, so casually.
Oh, sorry, it's just, you know, laugh about it or cry about it. That's the only choice. I'd rather laugh while I can.
He looked down at her from the corner of his eye, his posture still rigid for a moment. Then suddenly he softened, freeing one hand to place it on the side of her face.
Maybe we don't do what Kevin wants. Maybe we just stay here.
She put her hand over his. We would if we could. They'd find us eventually.
He nodded, almost to himself.
Okay, then. Shall we start loading?
Sure. Let me call Kevin first. Daniel started shifting bags from the Humvee to the Toyota while Alex enthused about the car to Kevin. Kevin wasn't much more excited than Daniel, but he got it immediately.
That's great, kid. Now hurry up. The clock's ticking.
We don't want to get to Atlanta before 9, so we don't need to leave here till, what, 2 a.m.?
All right. So, I'll expect you here around 5 p.m.
K. Counting down the seconds, she gushed facetiously. The car, or the afternoon with Daniel, had put her in an ebullient mood.
I'm glad you'll be driving all night, Kevin said. I think I like you better sleep-deprived.
With that, he hung up on her again. I should probably walk Einstein, Alex mused. Redo Lola's bandages, pack up the food. Then we should try to force ourselves to get a nap. We're flipping our sleeping routine again.
I suppose I'm not allowed to walk the dog, Daniel said.
Sorry, America's most wanted. My sad little face is better than yours right now, beard or no beard.
It's dark out. You sure it's safe for you to go alone?
I won't be alone. I'll have a supernaturally intelligent attack dog and a Sig Sauer P-220. He almost smiled.
Tough luck for the hungry gators.
She hid her frown. Alligators. She hadn't been thinking about things like that. Well, she'd stay away from the water, and hopefully Kevin had trained Einstein for more than just human attackers. The walk wasn't long, just enough for Einstein to stretch his legs a little. She couldn't stop thinking about giant reptiles. The road was black, but she didn't want to use a flashlight. She saw no headlights or house lights, heard nothing but swampy noises. It was still hot enough to have the perspiration rolling down her temples, but she was glad she'd brought the hoodie. The mosquitoes were definitely active. When she returned, the Toyota was in front of the house, and the Humvee invisible inside the garage. Daniel had taken care of everything but Lola's dressings. Alex did that, trying to make her work look professional. Hopefully the boarding place would believe a vet had tended her. She stroked Lola's ears, sadly. It would be better for Lola to be somewhere people could take care of her, but Alex would miss her. She wondered what would happen to the dog if they weren't able to come back for her. Lola was beautiful. Someone would want her. Alex remembered imagining taking Lola home with her in some safe, unlikely future. If only. Alex set the alarm clock by the bed for 1:45, but it was obvious that Daniel wasn't interested in stocking up on sleep. We're going to regret this around 8 a.m., she promised him, as his lips trailed down her sternum.
I won't ever regret this, he insisted.
He was probably right. Given the abbreviated timeline they were working with, it didn't make sense to waste even a second she got to have with him. Happiness with a deadline, just like she'd thought before. Only the happiness was greater now, and the deadline was crueler. Chapter 23 Alex did manage to get a little bit of sleep, maybe 30 minutes by the time the alarm sounded. Just enough that she was completely dragging as they set off. Daniel was more alert, so he took the first shift and she reclined the passenger seat as far back as it would go. The seats were much more comfortable, the suspension smoother, and it was easier to doze. The dog seemed happy in the back, as if they appreciated the new ride too. She was herself again by the time they got to the dog boarding facility north of Atlanta. It was after 9:30. They were running a little behind, thanks to some construction delays on I-65. Daniel stayed with the car as she carried Lola into the front office. It was a casual place, homey, with lots of fenced areas lining the road in. The dogs that ran alongside the car as they passed looked happy and healthy. Of course, Lola wouldn't be running anywhere for a while. The man behind the desk was all sympathy as Alex came in. He obviously had linked her to the reservation before she introduced herself as Ms. Wells. She followed patiently as he showed her the spacious kennel Lola would occupy and explained the visiting vet schedule. She thanked him and paid him for a month in advance, then gave Lola one last hug. As Kevin had promised, the man never commented on Lola's injury in a specific way, and he didn't mention Alex's face. 20 minutes later, she and Daniel were back on the road. Alex was glad it was her turn to drive. She needed something to concentrate on so she wouldn't think about leaving Lola behind. She thought Daniel would crash, but he was still bright-eyed and in a talkative mood, or maybe he could see how she was trying to fight off the sadness and wanted to help. Knowing him, that was probably it.
You know almost everything about me from that stupid file, he complained, but there's so much I don't know about you.
I've actually told you most of it. When my life wasn't bizarre, it was pretty boring.
Tell me something embarrassing about you in high school.
Everything about me was embarrassing in high school. I was a huge nerd.
Sounds sexy.
Oh, really? My mother cut my hair at home, and I had the most outrageous bangs the 90s had ever seen.
Please tell me there's a picture.
You wish. When my mother died, I burned all the incriminating stuff.
Who was your first boyfriend?
Alex laughed. Roger Markowitz. He took me to senior prom. I had the most totally awesome puffy sleeves on my dress. Electric blue, naturally. Roger tried to slip me the tongue in the limo on the way to the ballroom, but he was so nervous that he threw up on me. I spent the whole dance in the ladies' room trying to clean up. I broke up with him that night. One might describe it as an epic romance.
What a tearjerker.
I know. Romeo and Juliet had nothing on us. Daniel laughed.
Who was your first serious relationship?
Serious? Wow. I don't know if anyone would qualify besides Bradley. First year of med school at Columbia.
You went to Columbia Med?
He asked. I was a very brainy nerd.
I'm impressed. Back to Bradley.
Do you want to hear something really and truly embarrassing?
Very much.
The reason I was first attracted to him? She paused. Maybe I shouldn't admit this.
It's too late to turn back. You have to tell me now.
She took a deep breath. Okay, fine. He looked like Egon, you know, from Ghostbusters. Just exactly like that. Bouffant hair, round glasses, everything. Daniel worked to keep a straight face.
Irresistible.
You have no idea. So hot.
How long were you together?
Through that first summer. Then I won a scholarship in my second year. We both applied, and he thought he was a shoo-in. He didn't take it well when I, as he put it, took it from him. He went in and demanded to see our scores, something I noticed multiple times throughout my wild and crazy romantic period. Lots of guys don't like girls to be smarter than they are.
That must have really limited your dating pool.
Right down to zero.
Well, rest assured, I've never had a problem with a woman who is smarter than me. I wouldn't want to limit my pool by that much. I think that kind of childishness usually goes away when men grow up.
I'll have to take your word for it. I never dated anyone outside of school. I didn't get to explore the adult stage of the human male. Well, till now.
Never?
He asked, shocked. I was recruited while I was still in school. I told you what it was like after that.
But you must have met people outside of work. You got vacation time, didn't you?
She smiled. Not very often, and it was hard for me to talk to people outside of the lab. Everything was classified. I was classified. I couldn't be myself in any way or talk about any part of my real life with the person on the outside. It was too hard being some imaginary character. I preferred isolation. It embarrassed me to try to play a role. Ironic, isn't it? Now I have a new name every other week. He put his hand on her knee.
I'm sorry. It sounds horrible.
Yeah, it frequently was. That's why I'm so backward when it comes to interpersonal relations. But on the plus side, I got to do some really cutting-edge work with monoclonal antibodies. I'm talking about sci-fi stuff here, the kind of thing people don't believe exists, and I had essentially no limits on my practical research. I got everything I wanted in the lab. My budget was amazing. I'm responsible for a larger chunk of the national debt than you know. He laughed. So was your ex-wife smarter than you are? She asked. He hesitated for a moment.
It doesn't bother you to talk about her?
Why would it? You didn't get jealous over the eternal flame I will always carry for Roger Markowitz.
Good point. Well, Lainey was very bright in her own way. Not book smart, but clever, shrewd. When we met, she was so vivid. She wasn't like other women I dated. Easygoing girls who were content with easygoing me. Lainey always wanted more from every aspect of life. She was a little contrary. In the beginning, I thought she just had very firm opinions and wasn't afraid to disagree. I loved that about her, but then, over time, well, she wasn't really opinionated. She just loved the drama. She would argue if you told her the sun rises in the east. It was always exciting, at least.
Ah, so you're an adrenaline junkie. This all starts to make sense now.
What makes sense?
Your attraction to me. He stared at her,
blinking owlishly the way he did when he was surprised. "Admit it," she teased. "You're just in this for the thrill of the near-death experiences."
"Hmm, I hadn't considered that."
"Maybe we should forget this gig in D.C. after all. If I eliminate my hunters and life gets all safe and boring, you'll be out the door, won't you?" She sighed theatrically. She couldn't tell if he was serious or playing along when he answered.
"I was never fond of this plan to begin with. Maybe it is smarter to run.
On the other hand, if I do a bad job in D.C., it's going to get a lot more dangerous. You'll love that." He gave her a bleak stare. "Was that over the line?" she asked.
"A little too close to home."
"Sorry." He sighed.
"Your theory is incorrect, though, I'm afraid. See, I got over my love of drama early on. It was still exciting, but so was drowning in quicksand, I'd imagine. Exciting is not the same thing as enjoyable."
"But you didn't leave." Daniel stared at his hand, curled tensely around her thigh now, as he answered.
"No. I thought, well, this makes me sound like a first-class sucker. I thought I could fix her. She had a lot of issues from her past, and I let those issues be the excuse when she did things to hurt me. I never blamed her. I always blamed her history. Cliff, that's the man she left me for. What a fantastic name to be left for, don't you think? Cliff wasn't her first fling. I found out about the others later."
He glanced up at her suddenly.
"Was that all in the file?"
"No." He stared out the windshield.
"I knew I should give up. I knew I wasn't holding on to anything real. The Lainey I loved was just a construct in my head, but I was stubborn, stupidly so. Sometimes you cling to a mistake simply because it took so long to make."
"It sounds miserable."
He looked over and smiled at her weakly. "Yes, it was. But the hardest part was just admitting none of it had ever been real. It's humiliating, you know, to be duped. So my pride was hurt worse than anything else."
"I'm sorry."
"And I'm sorry, too. My stories are so much less entertaining than yours. Tell me about another boyfriend."
"I have a question first." He stiffened a little bit.
"Go ahead."
"That story you told the hooker, Kate, what was that about?"
"Huh?"
His eyebrows pulled together in confusion. "The one who was supposed to plant your tracker. Kevin said you told her your divorce wasn't final, but he also said this conversation happened 2 years after you split. You didn't contest the divorce. It went through in months. So why did you say that?"
Daniel laughed. "Thank you, seriously, from the very bottom of my heart, for not voicing that question in front of Kevin."
"You're welcome."
"Yes, the divorce was ancient history by then, but this girl, girls like that, did not wander into the dive bar where I used to hang out, and if one happened to, I would not have been the guy she approached."
"What was she like?"
"If memory serves, she was stunning, and predatory, and oddly frightening. I never believed for an instant that she was really attracted to me. I could sense there was an agenda, and I didn't want to fall for it. I was a little sensitive at that point to the idea of being duped again, but of course I didn't want to be rude, so I went with the politest refusal I could think of."
Alex chuckled. "You're right. Never, ever tell Kevin that you were afraid of the stunning hooker.
Can you imagine?"
He laughed with her.
"Your turn. Another boyfriend."
"I'm running out. Let's see. I dated a guy named Felix for a couple of weeks in undergrad."
"And what extinguished the flames of your passion?"
"You have to understand, the only place I ever met boys was in a lab."
"Go on."
"Well, Felix worked with animals, rats, mostly. He kept a lot of them in his apartment. There was a smell problem." Daniel threw his head back and howled with laughter. The sound of it was infectious. She couldn't help chortling along with him. It was not as out of control as that first afternoon in Kevin's secret lair, but it was close. All the stress seemed to drain out of her body, and she felt more relaxed than she would have thought possible in light of where she was headed. Eventually, Daniel fell asleep, mid-sentence, as he described his fifth-grade crush. He'd been fighting his droopy eyelids for a while, and she suspected again that he'd been trying to keep her mind off the negatives. It was relaxing to have him sleeping peacefully next to her. Einstein was snoring on the back seat, a nice counterpoint to the even sound of Daniel's breathing. She knew she should be thinking of a variety of plans, ways to get Karsten without exposing herself too greatly, but she just wanted to enjoy the moment. Peace was going to be a limited commodity in her near future. If this was the last moment that she got to be entirely content, then she wanted to experience it fully. She was in a rare state of calm when she woke Daniel a few hours later as they were entering the outskirts of D.C. The last time she'd pulled into the city, she'd been furious and terrified. She probably had even more reason to feel that way today, but she was still enjoying the time she had left alone with Daniel, and she wasn't going to let that go before she had to. Daniel read the directions to her as she got closer to their target. As she'd originally thought, this was a nice neighborhood, and it was only getting nicer. Wasn't that like Kevin, to hide somewhere so incongruous? She circled the building with the matching address twice, doubting whether this could be the place. I'd better call him. Daniel handed her the phone. She hit redial, and it rang once.
You're late, Kevin answered. What's wrong now?
Traffic. Nothing. I think we're outside, but this place doesn't look right.
Why?
We're hiding out in a fancy Art Deco high-rise?
Yeah. A friend of mine is letting us crash. There's parking under the building. Go to the fourth level down. I'll meet you.
He disconnected. She handed the phone back to Daniel. Just once, I want to hang up on him first.
You did the very first time he called, remember? Fairly spectacularly.
Oh, right. That does make me feel better. All the tension came back as they rounded the corner into the parking garage, and the daylight disappeared. She drove in a claustrophobic downward spiral until she reached the right level, and then saw Kevin standing impatiently beside an empty space marked Residence Only. He waved her into it. She braced herself as she opened the door, expecting a few snide comments about her face or disparaging observations about Daniel's screw-ups, but Kevin said only,
"Don't mind the cameras. I took them offline this morning,"
and then opened the back of the SUV to let Einstein out. There was a real reunion with Einstein, who threw Kevin to the ground and attempted to lick the skin off his face. Trying to pretend that she wasn't the slightest bit jealous of Einstein's affection for his man, Alex ignored them both until she and Daniel were loaded up with as much as they could carry.
Which way?
She asked. Kevin got up with a sigh.
Follow me.
To his credit, he did grab the remaining duffel bags as they went to the elevator.
Do I need a hat?
Alex asked. Is there a lobby? I'm not exactly ready for my close-up.
No worries, Allie. This goes straight to the apartment. By the way, bro, nice beard. It's a good look on you, in that you don't look like you as much anymore.
Thanks.
About this friend, Alex began. Kevin sighed again.
They can't all be Arnie's. Sorry, Shorty. This might get rough.
You don't trust him? The elevator opened into a plush hallway, or was it an anteroom? There was only one door in the space.
I've paid her through next week, so I trust her about that far.
The hair on the back of Alex's neck stood up. Daniel had gotten her more used to human interaction, but she knew she still had some pretty severe people issues. As they walked the length of the short hall, she struggled with the duffel in her right hand, trying to free some fingers so she could pull a syringe from her belt. Just as she caught hold of the one she wanted, Daniel touched her wrist. She glanced up, and he was giving her a look that seemed to imply she was overreacting. Frowning, she slid the syringe back into place. It wouldn't take long to draw it if the need arose anyway. Kevin had a key to the single door. He took a deep breath as he pushed it open. At first, Alex wasn't sure they hadn't stumbled into the lobby after all, because she'd never been inside an apartment with a wide marble staircase up to another story. The place was lavish, sleek, and modern, and lined with floor-to-ceiling windows that immediately had her feeling exposed. Through the glass, the sun was just beginning to droop toward the D.C. skyline. There didn't seem to be any other apartments close enough to look into this one, but a telescope would make it possible. Or a rifle sight.
No!
A hard, but somehow still velvety voice announced from behind them. Alex whirled.
The apartment stretched back the other way, too, wrapping around the front door and the hallway beyond. On one side was a huge white kitchen, on the other a dining room with seating for 10, with more window walls framing each. Leaning against the marble kitchen island was the most exquisite human being Alex had ever seen in real life. The woman looked exactly like a facetious description Alex had conjured up to describe Kevin's improbable mental image of the Oleander. She had honey blonde hair, thick and long, that stood out from her head in full waves like a Disney cartoon's. Sapphire blue doe eyes, full red lips turned up at the corners, and a straight, narrow nose, all set with flawless symmetry in an oval face with prominent cheekbones. Swan neck over elegant collarbones. Of course, the generous hourglass figure with a tiny waist and legs that seemed longer than Alex's entire body. The woman was wearing only a short, black kimono and an irritated expression.
"It's temporary," Kevin said in a conciliatory voice. "Obviously, I'll pay you the same for each of them, 3 times what we originally agreed on."
The surreally perfect woman raised one eyebrow and looked pointedly at Einstein. His tail was wagging furiously. He stared up at the blonde with the proverbial puppy dog eyes.
4 times,
Kevin promised. He dropped the bags he was carrying.
"You like dogs?" "Kate?"
Daniel asked suddenly, surprised recognition saturating his tone. The woman's face dimpled into a toothpaste commercial quality smile.
"Hi, Danny," she purred. "I almost didn't know you with all that scruff." "Well, that does make me feel better. You left a nasty welt on my ego, but at least you didn't forget me."
"It's, nice to see you again," Daniel stammered, flummoxed by her greeting.
The blonde's eyes cut to Kevin.
"Okay, he can stay."
"It's just a few nights," Kevin said. "I need the little one, too."
"You know I don't like women in my space," she said in a flat voice, flicking her eyes to Alex, then back to Kevin.
"Oh, that's okay. Allie's not a real girl," Kevin assured her.
Daniel dropped his bags and took half a step forward before Alex hooked the back of his shirt with her one free finger.
"Not now," she muttered.
Kate, or whatever her real name was, shrugged gracefully away from the island and glided toward them. She looked down her nose at Alex, easy to do, as she was a good foot taller.
"So what happened to your face? Your boyfriend tune you up?"
Daniel stiffened. Alex wasn't sure what this was, maybe some kind of territorial thing? It was only a guess. Alex didn't have a lot of experience with other women. In the distant past, she'd suffered through a couple of immature roommates, liked a few other lady science geeks, and made small talk with the rare female underling who didn't flee her presence. Mostly, she'd worked with men, and she didn't know all the rules for double X chromosome interactions. At a loss, she went with the truth, though she probably should have waited to see what Kevin had told the woman. No, it was a mafia assassin. Alex worked her jaw, feeling the bandage pull against her skin. "Oh, and the older stuff was just Kevin trying to kill me."
"If I'd actually been trying to kill you, you'd be dead,"
Kevin grumbled.
Alex rolled her eyes.
"What, you want to go another round?"
Kevin demanded.
"Anytime, sweetheart."
"The next time I put you down," Alex promised, "it will be permanently." Kevin laughed, not derisively like she expected, but with genuine delight.
"See what I mean, Val?"
The woman looked like she was trying not to smile.
"Okay, you've piqued my interest, but I have only the one extra room."
"Ollie's good at roughing it."
"Whatever," the woman said.
Apparently it was an agreement.
"Get all that mess out of my living room."
She skimmed close by Daniel as she passed them. Without a backward glance, she headed upstairs. The kimono was very short, and both brothers watched her climb with partially open mouths.
"You turned her down?"
Alex muttered under her breath. Kevin heard her and laughed again.
"Let's move this stuff before she kicks us all out."
The extra bedroom was bigger than Alex's entire DC apartment had been, and it wasn't as if she'd been living in a dive. Her place was what real estate agents described as a luxury apartment. This place, though, was several degrees beyond mere luxury. Kevin had seemed on the level when he said the woman was a hooker, but Alex hadn't had any idea that profession could pay so well. Kevin stacked the duffels against one wall.
Ollie, you still got that cot, right? There's a huge walk-in closet off the bathroom. Check it out and see if it will work for you. You could set up on one of those couches out there, but it might be best to keep you out of Val's line of sight as much as possible.
Of course Alex will sleep in the bed, Daniel said. Kevin's eyebrows pulled together skeptically.
Really? You're going to get all chivalrous about Ollie?
It's like you never even met our mother. Relax, Alex said as Kevin bridled. We'll work it out.
Fine,
Kevin said. Should I have been more careful with my words out there? Alex asked Kevin. You said she's not trustworthy. Kevin shook his head.
No, you're fine. Val might kick us all into the street when she's tired of us, but she won't sell us out. I've bought her time and her discretion. What happens with Val stays with Val. She has a reputation to protect.
Okay, Alex agreed, though she wasn't sure she entirely understood Val's policies. He moved to the door, then paused with his hand on the knob.
There's plenty of food in the fridge if you're hungry, or we can order something in.
Thanks, Alex said. I'll sort my stuff out first. Yes, Daniel said. Let us get situated. Kevin hesitated one more second, then stepped back into the room.
Danny, I just wanted to say, it's good to see you. I'm glad you're safe.
Like before, as he was leaving the ranch, Kevin looked like he wouldn't be opposed to a hug. Daniel stood awkwardly, his body language full of ambivalence.
Yes, well, thanks to Alex, Daniel said. And I'm glad you're not dead like she thought you were.
Kevin barked a laugh.
Yeah, me too. And thanks again, Poison Woman. I owe you one.
He exited on another laugh, leaving the door cracked behind him. Daniel gave Alex a long stare, then went to the door and quietly shut it all the way. He turned back to her, and there was clearly an argument about to begin. She shook her head and motioned him to follow her farther into the guest suite. For a second, the bathroom made her forget why she'd come this way. A swimming pool-sized tub was set into the floor, surrounded by marble and a faintly blue tile wall that shimmered like a pale sea. A showerhead the diameter of a truck tire was suspended from the ceiling over it.
What is this place? Alex gasped.
Daniel shut the door behind them.
Kate, or rather Val, is apparently quite successful.
Do you think she's really a prostitute, or was that just Kevin trying to make the story better?
I didn't come in here to talk about Val.
She turned to face him, her lips twisting sideways into a pucker.
Alex, I don't like lying to him.
Who's lied?
Acting, then, pretending that we're nothing to each other.
She huffed a sigh. I'm just not ready to deal with the inevitable reaction. I have enough stress.
We're going to have to tell him eventually. Why not get it over with?
He saw her expression change as she weighed the options.
You still don't believe we have an eventually, do you? He accused.
Well, there is a good possibility either he or I will be dead within the next week, so why rock the boat? Daniel abruptly pulled her into a rough hug that was somehow more reproachful than comforting.
Don't say that. I can't stand to hear you talk that way.
Sorry, she said into his shirt.
We can run away. Tonight. We'll hide. You know how.
Can we at least wait till we've slept and eaten? She asked plaintively. He laughed unwillingly at her tone.
I suppose I could allow that much.
She relaxed into him for a moment, wishing again that running were the right option. It sounded so much easier, restful, almost.
Let's just walk out there, hand in hand, Daniel suggested, and then make out on the sofa for a bit.
First, eating and sleeping. I am not dealing with the aftermath of some grand reveal until I'm sure I've considered all the possible forms the backlash might take and whether I need to be armed, or rather how armed I need to be. I can't even think straight right now.
All right, he said. I'll give you tonight because I know how exhausted you are, but
We're revisiting this discussion in the morning, and I intend to be quite inflexible.
Will Kevin be in here too? She wondered. The woman said there was only one extra room. That won't make discussing anything very easy.
I doubt it.
She could hear the eye roll in his voice, and she pulled away to look at his face. He didn't let her go, but he dropped his arms to rest more casually around her waist. Oh, do you think she meant this was the only empty extra room?
No, I think he's staying with her.
She wrinkled her nose. Really? She didn't seem to like him very much.
The women in his life never do.
She was still unconvinced. But she could do so much better.
Daniel laughed. I won't argue with that.
Chapter 24. Val's huge double fridge was much better stocked than Arnie's. In fact, it was much better stocked than the average restaurant's. It looked like she was planning to feed a dozen more guests than those she already had in residence, though she apparently had not been apprised of Alex and Daniel's existence until moments before they arrived. The incongruity bothered Alex a little, but not enough to deter her from the bowl of grapes. She felt like she hadn't eaten anything fresh in weeks, though it really hadn't been so very long. The ranch seemed months ago. She could barely wrap her head around how short the time actually was. Alex sat on one of the pure white ultra-modern bar stools. It wasn't terribly comfortable. Daniel was humming with pleasure as he examined the accoutrement.
Now this is a kitchen, he murmured.
He started sorting through the lower drawers, evaluating the pots and pans available.
Making ourselves right at home, are we?
Daniel jerked upright. Alex paused with a grape halfway to her mouth. Val came into the room laughing, still in the brief kimono.
Relax. All this stuff is here for you. I don't really use this room.
Thank you, Daniel said.
She shrugged.
Kevin paid for it. So you like to cook?
I dabble.
He's being modest, Alex told her. He's a 5-star chef. Val smiled warmly at Daniel as she stretched her whole torso across the island toward him, so her chin nearly touched the marble.
Wow, that's nice. I've never had a live-in chef before. It sounds fun.
Alex wondered how Val was able to load so many different implications into one common word.
I suppose so,
Daniel said, flushing a little.
Where's Kevin?
Walking the dog.
Val turned her face toward Alex, and Alex braced for more aggression.
I asked Kevin about you. Kevin says you tortured him.
Val jerked her head toward Daniel.